Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Breathtaking football! That's what Maryland does!
This is Dirt and Spray.
Are you a big man? Pop, I'm talking to you!
What?
You wake up in the morning, you start putting on my big boy pants! Put a little jacket, you go! You take your lunch because you got big boy pants on!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Spray.
I can say big loud things! I can be demonstrative! This is how you conduct yourself! In a democracy!
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
We want to look to the future, we've got to tear down the past. Babe Ruth was nothing more than a fat old man with little girl legs.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and I think and hope you too.
Yeah, we're up.
We're up?
We're up, we're working.
All right, it's me.
I own it all.
You need me here for everything to work.
Yeah, the cameras break when you're not here. They just don't function properly.
Well, you know, I can't blame them. You know?
You're a good-looking guy. What can I tell you?
When you're about to get freaky at night, you think about it. Well,
boy, we're not going to talk about the Bucks, but my God.
They had an interesting weekend, to say the least.
Blazers in the Bucks.
Bottom of the league.
A trade where nobody wins.
Do they have their first-round pick this year? Do the Bucks?
I don't think so.
Don't think so?
Does it matter?
Why don't we have that pick? We should have got this pick right out of the gate. Why don't we have future Bucks picks? We should have got this one this year. What are we doing, Joe?
What jersey will Giannis be wearing at the deadline? Oregon beat Maryland by 21.
They did.
However, and by the way, scored a touchdown third quarter.
They did.
How about that?
Thank you. Took a fake punt. They got it done, though. Fake punt to a third quarter touchdown. Nothing to see here.
What a possession for Dylan Gabriel to break the Case Keenum record. Jordan Burch running 40 yards on a fake punt. I watched this and I went, I think that's Burch. I said that out loud in my hotel room.
Right.
Like, oh my God, that's Burch.
He looked good running the football. That's for damn sure.
He doesn't look 300 pounds.
No, that's why he might be a first-round NFL draft pick, because the guy is an absolute freak athlete.
I would argue, I'm glad you said this. I was wondering this in my head. Did that play actually do more positive for him in his draft stock than any defensive play?
Look how he moved in the open field, man. He's flying down
broke
there.
Broke a tackle.
I was yelling at the other linemen, though. Charlie Pickard was one of them. Like, I hate when guys are running downfield and they're running ahead of the guy and they're not blocking
I'm
anybody.
Yes.
Like, you're just running, looking around. Like, that's great that you're. Can you go get a hat on a hat, please? Because that could have been a bigger game.
See, that's your DeAnthony Thomas PTSD.
Just running around. This is great. We got a caravan. Like, no, go block somebody.
So Jordan Burch goes on a fake punt in Oregon's own territory against Maryland, goes for 40, and then Gabriel throws the record-breaking touchdown, the FBS all-time touchdown leader now, to offensive lineman Denoris Wilson. And then they go for two on that touchdown with Connerly, and he gets it. So it's three 300-pounders.
Pretty cool.
Keep in mind, second hour, what's coming, by the way. Three 300-pounders giving you a touchdown. Oregon certainly wasn't perfect in this game. I know you got a lot of notes on that. You're going to probably say the sky is kind of falling somehow, some way. But Oregon did win by three touchdowns, took two picks in the second half to secure things. They went ahead with that Evan Stewart touchdown, 39-18 against Maryland.
I love that I put out the show tease last night, just, you know, hey, just trying to be friendly. Show's going to start on Monday, and I said, the Ducks struggle, but get to 10-0, and I had multiple people to respond. Struggle? They won by 21.
All right. There's two ways of looking at that, and I think you're aware of what that is.
Yeah. I know that the final score was 20. Did you watch the game?
The sky's not falling.
No. I actually am going to argue today that I'm glad that they had that performance, to be honest with you. But to act like they didn't struggle or have a bad game, like, for the love of God.
I called it scratchy. They had a scratchy game.
I mean, they were horrible offensively.
Lanning wasn't impressed. He said as much after the game.
Yeah. They were horrible offensively. They needed a pretty lucky fumble call that very easily could have been called an incomplete pass that ended up being a defensive touchdown. They needed to fake a punt in the third quarter to extend a drive. They went three and out again on their opening drive of the third. They went three and out on their opening drive of the first half.
Yeah.
They dropped I don't know how many balls. They had 12 penalties, I believe, on the game.
Yeah, very uncharacteristic.
That just like was Oregon the most uncharacteristic.
They played sloppy. They had a bad game. The benefit of it and the blessing of it is you played, I would argue, your C-minus game, and you won by 21 points. Like, that is the overarching positive storyline out of this game. The other thing that I will add.
Yeah.
Offensively, they were not good.
Mm-mm.
Hardly at all in this game. Not many things that you can hang your hat on. The offensive line struggled to create push at times. Gabriel didn't look. He was just a little off. The receivers dropped a ton of balls, ton of penalties, as we all talked about.
Yeah.
We're going to get to eventually during the show today. We'll talk about Miami and the way that they lost. This is the difference between a legitimate title contender and you're a good team with a good offense. And that is when somebody takes something away, is there another group or unit or position, whatever, that can fill in the void and help lead you to a win? And I thought that was the case on Saturday. It's ironic because we talked about it on Friday. Maryland's defense is one of the worst in the Big Ten. One of the worst in the conference. They're terrible. They can't stop anything. Statistically speaking, they're one of the worst defenses in the Big Ten. Their offense is what is their strength, and their passing game is what is their strength. Oregon held the number one passing attack in the Big Ten to 289 total yards of offense. They forced three turnovers. They had countless pressures. How many times did they have a batted ball at the line of scrimmage? They had a pick that set up a short yardage touchdown in the second half. They had a defensive touchdown in the game. Their front, creating pressure and getting their hands up, I would argue single-handedly won that game for Oregon, and that's the difference of your offense laid a absolute clunker out there this weekend. Under 370 total yards of offense against that defense is not good, but your defensive front was so dominant that you still won the game by 21 points.
We're just always going to associate offense with, I think, almost any Oregon team because of what we've seen in our lives. This team is a little more about defense than it is offense.
All their special seasons have come when they've had a dominant defense.
Yes. Yeah.
95, Rose Bowl.
Well, I would argue the years prior to, maybe not so much the 95 team or 01.
The gangrene defense and
but
all that.
But like the Chip Kelly years, they had underrated defense. They just weren't quite built the way they're built now.
Yeah, the defense that made the title game of 14 had Buckner and Armstead. I mean,
That
was a good defense. They got bulldozed eventually by Ohio State, but for the majority of the year, that was a really good defense.
Well, and the other thing is you mentioned a C. That was kind of, to me, you didn't need the special teams touchdowns. That was Boise State type game.
Yeah, offensively it was.
Yes.
It was ugly.
And you were able to kind of comfortably win that thing.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I was kind of wanting to pick your brain on is you mentioned Cam Ward in Miami, and I don't want to take away from the Ducks specific. I largely agree with your point. Like, this is why Oregon, to me, I've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and now Georgia's lost again. They are in a tier either with fill-in-the-blank team that you think is right there with them or by themselves. They have proved that, I think, over the large portion of the season. They are unscathed, and right now it's trending to they're not losing a game. They're not losing to Washington at home. That's payback. And they're 14.5-point favorites at Wisconsin this weekend. But even with that being said, the playoff is where this will get very, very interesting to me. We've talked about matchup dependency, but we see this in the NFL, right? One team plays their best game, and one team is slightly worse than they usually are.
Mm-hmm.
And boom.
Upsets happen.
And I don't buy my... I view Miami as a playoff team, not a title contender.
Yeah.
However, just thinking of a Cam Ward is going off, Miami is clicking, that is a terrifying thing to encounter. Oregon right now, even when they're not playing their best, they're still not losing. And maybe this game, the blessing was that you played in Autzen and not in Maryland. Maybe that's another underrated point of this. But you've seen all throughout the country these teams. BYU is still undefeated. Indiana's undefeated. But they certainly, that didn't look the same.
Right.
I think what you'd say about Oregon is when they don't play even a B game, they're winning by three touchdowns. Georgia plays a B to C game, they're outright losing. And that is not something we're accustomed, I think, in this area to be familiar with.
No, you're not wrong there. The one thing I would say about Georgia is that their schedule has been ridiculously challenging this year.
They have
usually had cakewalks in the SEC. That's different this year.
But they'd win if their quarterback didn't suck.
Yeah, their offense is an absolute problem. And that, again, highlights the weakness that they have. There's a weakness on that football team where it doesn't feel like there is necessarily that right now for Oregon. This one also, in hindsight, like on Wednesday, I think it was after practice, Lanning came out. I didn't see this till later in the week, but and his after practice media availability, he came out and was very critical of his team's effort at practice. And I actually think ultimately that, yes, I use the word struggle because they did struggle this weekend. That's a really good thing that happened, to be honest with you, because I think
you want them to be a little humble along the way, right?
They have almost been on cruise control now. The Ohio State game was obviously a nail biter that could have gone either way. Going all the way back to Oregon State, they have been on, like, when have they felt uncomfortable at all this season?
Boise State and Ohio State
were the last two times it happened, right? Ohio State should have happened because they're one of the best teams in the country. So there was almost a nice, like, all right, that should sharpen the focus a little bit. And when you look at where it lied on the schedule, in between a road trip to Michigan, where we can look at Michigan and say that's clearly not the same team as they've been the last couple of years, but it's still the Big House, it's defending national champions, you're playing Michigan and Ann Arbor, like, that's a big game that guys circle on their calendar. And the same thing exists this coming weekend. Like, Wisconsin is one of the bigger programs in the country. You're going on the road to their stadium for a primetime night game. Like, that's a big game. This was your Big Ten Network. Maryland is in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that takeaway even as a fan, to be honest with you. Like,
well, it's not exciting.
This is one of the
Maryland
times where
football.
You're just like, I'm all for the Big Ten move. It was the right decision after USC left, and signing an Apple TV deal would have been a disaster, all that. This is one of those weeks that I'm just like, can we just get through the week?
This is Purdue week to me.
You're playing Maryland. Like, at least that one's on the road. So it's like, hey, it's a new atmosphere. We're getting to see. You're playing Maryland. Why are we playing Maryland in football? This is so dumb. It's in November. We shouldn't be playing Maryland. I digress. But they found a way to just survive in advance at this point, because they can even lose two more games and probably still make the playoffs. They're not going to do that. But I think it's a good thing where you have a struggle. You have a bad performance with a lot of penalties, and it's a great way to kind of grab everybody's attention again. To say, if you play that way in Madison this weekend, you might not lose, but it's going to be an uncomfortable, really awkward game. So you better sharpen the iron a little bit here before you go back on the road.
I'm anxiously awaiting the release of the week documentaries. What are those called? The
Ducks versus Them.
Cinematic recaps. Yeah, the cinematic recap. I want to see if my tortoise and the hare thing ended up being his message. They ended up, you know, sustaining and winning that football game.
They played a little bit like a tortoise there for a while.
A little cocky sniffing there.
They were a little bit of a tortoise.
Be careful. I thought it was interesting that somebody in the post game asked Lanning if they played this way because of the election.
What are we doing? What are we doing? I don't know who that was. I don't know how they got a credential.
That was an interesting question. I don't think he appreciated that one very much based on what I saw on his face. Jordan James and Trayshon Holden.
I think they're going to be fine. Holden came back in the game,
right?
Like, I know Jake Butt on the broadcast, who, by the way, I enjoy Jake Butt.
I've wanted to get Jake Butt on the show since Big Ten Media.
He's pretty solid. I like Jake Butt.
Yeah.
This is what they've done with Jordan James all year. We're playing Maryland.
Yeah.
Why would we use him in the second half?
I know, but people are, you know,
he was fine. He was fine. The other one that was the bigger one was Birch left the game for a bit, but it sounds like he just kind of rolled his ankle and he's going to be okay.
I think he's going to have nagging injuries the rest of the way.
It just kind
of
is. I mean, they're really smart with how they're using these guys. Like, if we're up by double digits in the second half against Maryland, why are we giving Jordan James an extra 8, 9, 10, 11 carries to add wear and tear on his body? He ended up with, what was the number? I think it was less than 10 carries this week. He had 7 carries in the
game. James, yeah, 7 carries.
That's perfect. You're going to need him for a bulk down the run, and when you get into a conference championship game or a playoff game, he's going to get 25, 30 carries a game. He will be your number one back. Save him for the games that matter.
I have a takeaway I want to bring from that game to carry it over and talk more college football next on The Fan.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from The Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Max Olson tweets, percentage of snaps played with a lead this season. Your Oregon Ducks, 75% of their snaps they've been playing with the lead this year. That is sixth in the country. It trails only Boise State, Ohio State, Indiana, Ole Miss, and Army.
Ah, yeah. Army, I don't think, has trailed in a game all year, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe they have.
But they went 14-6 this weekend.
Yeah, they had one of those stretches where it's like they have not they didn't trail hardly at all.
I don't think their schedule's been very...
They have not played anybody, no. They get Notre Dame in a couple of weeks.
And season, though.
Imagine the Notre Dame-Navy score will be very similar in Notre Dame and Army.
I couldn't find this, so maybe somebody out, text please can help me with this. I also didn't spend that much time looking into it, but I couldn't find it right away. Has a school ever had two Heisman winners from the same state wearing the same number?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Because after Miami and Cam Ward fall, and he, you know, he wasn't awful, but he wasn't good, and that offense was struggling most of that Georgia Tech game, and then he had the fumble at the end. Hunter and Colorado continue to play well. JT had another monster game, but I find it hard to believe that Oregon finishes number one undefeated. Gabriel doesn't actually win this. It has largely been a quarterback award. Now let's see what Colorado will do, and if Hunter stays healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But Dylan Gabriel could be in the driver's seat of the Heisman, and he's wearing Mariota's number, and they're both from Hawaii. And I thought, I don't know if this has ever happened ever in college football.
Yeah, it's hard to think of one off the top of your head, to be honest with you. Maybe from one of those like Southern schools, you've had a running back or a quarterback that looked up to somebody else. There's not one that jumps out in my mind, though. It was interesting because he broke the record this weekend, which is a very big deal for the overarching storyline of college football. Like,
yeah,
it's really
Case Keenum's long-time record.
The total touchdowns responsible for, and he threw it to an offensive lineman, and that was funny. Hey, fat touchdown, and then they went for two, all that. It was a really fun moment in that game that kind of spiced things up in what was a lackluster performance and lackluster opponent. It didn't quite have a lot of gravitas for me, though, as a fan. I think primarily because he's a hired gun here for 1 year. How many touchdowns has he accounted for this year? What are we up to, about 30 almost, somewhere in that range?
I have to go look.
So he's got 22 passing touchdowns, and I think he's running in six. So he's accounted for 28 total touchdowns this year. And he's at, 178 was the overall record, I think, that he broke for Case Keenum. So you're such a small percentage of that that they didn't quite have the same feeling of, like, if that was a guy that played in the uniform for 4 years and broke the record, or in his case, 5 or 6 years, I think it would have meant a little bit more.
Interesting.
And I love Dylan Gabriel, dude. His press conferences are awesome. He's a great leader. He's been awesome in that locker room. The guys love him. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute gamer in the biggest moments. There's not anybody in the country that I would rather have under center when you need to make a play right now. That's the way that I view him, and it's the way that I viewed him coming in. He also has times where he's like, all right, we're playing Maryland and I airballed a throw, or we're playing Purdue and I threw a pick, or, you know, just
Illinois. I'm going to throw this in a double coverage and see what happens.
Yeah,
it didn't work out. We're up 20.
And we won by 30. It's not a big deal. But when the game's on the line and you need him to come up with plays, he's going to find a way to come up with plays for you. But it didn't quite have the same gravitas of another record breaker, or if a guy had been in Oregon for a long time. The irony of the Heisman conversation as well is, He didn't have a very good game this weekend, which is why it's kind of they won.
And I know. He had touchdowns and he broke the record.
He did.
And like, that's,
he averaged 5 yards. He had like 180 passing yards.
One of his worst games
maybe
of the year.
I think it legitimately was his worst game of the season.
But you know how this is.
I know.
Win, win, win. Quarterback, quarterback, quarterback.
I tend to think,
there you go.
I tend to think if Colorado could win the Big 12, which is a very realistic possibility now.
Right now it's them and BYU in the Big 12 title game.
And if they make the college football, the Colorado Buffaloes make the college football playoff.
I want it to happen so bad.
Just think about that.
We need that to happen.
I think Travis Hunter is going to win the award. I think it's his.
Hmm.
That's my stance. And let Gabriel...
It just feels like the Gabriel stuff, you nailed it when I did the poll question on this, and maybe I'm going to be wrong on it. Just feels like, man, they're going to play Wisconsin this weekend.
They are.
Prime
Wisconsin, by the way, as a listener points out, valid. They're coming off a bye. Maryland was coming off a bye for this game, and now Wisconsin's coming off a bye, and you've played... 7 in a row, I want to say.
But
eight
you just
in a row.
Played a bad game, and now this is prime time in
on
Madison.
The road, yeah.
I tend to believe the difference is going to be what that spread is. And so if Gabriel has a bounce-back game where he throws 3 touchdowns, no picks.
Yeah, 430 NBC game.
280 to 320, like he's efficient. It's largely a quarterback award is all my point is. I'm with you on Hunter. The buzz is certainly there. Interesting note on the Gabriel. I think I'm going to put that up as a poll question of, would you want any other quarterback in a big game in the country right now? Because the thing about Dylan Gabriel and Oregon is you look around, and I don't think there is another answer. It ain't Carson Beck.
No, God, no. It's Quinn Ewers is showing you against, and, granted, Georgia's good defense, but he was horrendous in that game and got benched.
Got pulled in that game.
Cam Ward this weekend showed you the ugly side of Cam Ward, and that is that he's going to have some funky turnover. They had the ball with a chance to win on 2nd and 10, and he's scrambling around trying to make a Hail Mary play, and he gets strip sacked from behind.
It ain't Cade Klubnik.
No.
I don't know. I'm pressed. I don't know who I would choose.
I mean, Shador's
that,
having a very good year,
Shador,
but I would take Dylan
Shador,
Gabriel
but
over
Shador
him.
Hasn't been as many big games. Yeah. Also interesting, your feeling on the hired gun part. Your fan base hasn't adopted that with Bo Nix. It's been the opposite. It's as if
he was there for 2 years.
Yeah, but like,
and I also think this
isn't that what this world is now? It's hired guns.
I love Dylan Gabriel. It didn't have a sentimental value to me because 94% of those touchdowns came in a different uniform.
But if Nix would have broken this record in a Duck uniform, would you have said the same thing?
I don't know.
I hear what you're saying on the 4 year difference, but Nix is only two.
The Nix thing was a little more, I think there was more there for Nix because of the symbolism of what he meant.
The turnaround from the
like you
first
lost
game.
You lost Crystal Ball. You didn't know where the program was going to go. He was brought in. It was like, oh God, this is really coming off of Anthony Brown, unproven head coach, and you look up and you're 11-1 in year two. Like he helped reestablish with Lanning where you are, and I think that's why there's a little more there. And 2 years is two's bigger than one.
What team around the landscape of college football? In, I guess, the playoff conversation, because Oregon's going to stay number one tomorrow with the ranking.
The irony is if they lose, what does the committee do? Because they have to honor head-to-head, and Ohio State's the number two team in the country. So you're essentially acknowledging that even if they lose,
they would bump Ohio State one.
They wouldn't disrespect the head-to-head. I disagree with you there. I think the committee's been very solid on that.
Have they?
Yeah, that was a big thing last year with Texas and Alabama, because the way they were playing at the end of the year, Alabama ended up winning the SEC. Putting Alabama in meant they had to put Texas
they
in.
They have to have at least eight in the playoff committee era examples, at least a minimum of eight, where they've ranked one team that lost to another ahead of them because of when they lose.
I don't think there has been that many examples. Even when Oregon beat Ohio State and then lost a 3-9 Stanford, until they lost again later that season, they were ranked ahead of Ohio State with a loss to a 3-9 team.
If the Ducks lose to either Wisconsin or Washington, that's a worse loss than Ohio State's
losing
loss.
By one.
That's
at
fine.
Austin.
They also want they beat Ohio State. I'm not look. You can argue this. That's fine. I think there's precedent from the committee that they will always respect and honor
so
head-to-heads.
Your position on this, that is, if Oregon is to lose to Wisconsin, and I don't even know who Ohio State plays. Ohio State, wins this week.
They got
Northwestern.
They play Indiana.
They got Northwestern this week, and then they get Indiana.
So Ohio State wins, and Oregon loses. You think the committee doesn't change the top two?
I don't think they do. I don't.
So do you,
or they bump Texas to one, and then Oregon to two, and then Ohio State.
How would that
three,
make sense for Ohio State for Texas to jump Ohio State?
I'm just telling you, this is what the committee has done. Are we forgetting that they always respect head-to-heads?
No, I
this is a precedent that they have died on this hill.
I see. I kind of have a thing in my head where I feel like we've seen examples in their top 25 rankings where they jump teams despite having head-to-heads.
If there's a similar record, I think that will always be the tiebreaker. Now, you can maybe go look. I'll go look at the rankings because we have examples of head-to-head. So you're going to have it this weekend, like with Tennessee. Well, Alabama's a two-loss team, so that wouldn't work. But like Alabama, Georgia right now, Alabama will likely be ranked ahead of Georgia. And I believe they were not in the last one, but Georgia was a one-loss team and Alabama was a two-loss team. So you're going to have examples of that. Just keep an eye on it because I remember this being a legitimate debate the year Cristobal went to Columbus and won and then lost 2 weeks later to Stanford. And Oregon had one of the worst losses of any contender in the entire sport on their resume, and they were still ranked ahead of Ohio State until Utah put them in a wood chipper late in the season.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at that. That would be weird to not move at all if you lose as a 14-point favorite.
It would be very weird.
You might be right on that one. Hired gun Dylan Gabriel and no quarterback you trust more in college football than him under center in a big game. Hard to disagree with that given the landscape of what the sport's been this year.
He just seems like a big game guy.
Game-winning
drive, you need a play. Yeah. He's going to find a way to get it done.
I don't even know who my second option would be because Shador's having a great year and he's good. But have they been in that big game yet? I don't know if they have been.
No.
That might be looming for them, but I don't know if, you know, that might be a Big 12 title game situation.
Cam Moore definitely has that vibe of, like, he usually plays up to the occasion, but he just has, he's a turnover guy. The questionable turnovers are why I would take Dylan Gabriel over Cam Ward. He's loose with the ball. He extends plays too much. Jackson Dart was awesome this weekend.
Yeah.
But he also lost at home to Kentucky.
Right,
so,
you know,
you got that going for you.
We have a lot more to get into in the world of college football, a little more NFL. Our Blazers, I don't know if it's a full segment, but we need to talk. I couldn't sleep last night because I'm not a loser.
Losers can't sleep.
There needs to be
twice.
Real.
Yeah.
There needs to be a very honest, real conversation of what's happening. It's not that they're losing. People need to look deeper than the wins and losses situation. It's guys, it's not just that. So we'll get to that eventually as well. Dirt and Sprague. We're back with the Daily Ticker, which doesn't have a guest, but a fairly big story, and it's somewhat local. We'll get to that next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is powered by Pelican Brewing. Independently brewing since 1996. Your local coastal brewery, Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
Hi, Daily Ticker time, brought to you by Pelican Brewing, now offering their newest signature Pelican West Coast IPA on a shelf near you. Raise your glass and drink on Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
I was at Pelican this weekend.
Look at you. Oh. Our guest on Friday from Baton Rouge.
Oh, you had a Baton Rouge guest.
We did. All right. To talk about the live tiger on
Billy
the field.
Billy Mbadi. From,
wasn't it a fake tiger?
No, it was a real tiger.
No, it was a real tiger. Yeah. They just had to import it from Florida. It wasn't
they imported a Florida tiger, which should have been the first telltale sign that they were going to get boat race, because they have an actual tiger that lives outside of their stadium.
Mike the Tiger, Mike the Seventh, is there on campus, but hasn't been coming to games.
Could have just brought him into the field, but they didn't bring him. They bust in a tiger from Florida, and he gave a shout-out to the Cannon Beach location at Pelican Brewing.
Really?
From Baton Rouge. He was like, oh, by the way, shout out Pelican. I love their Cannon Beach location. It's like, wait, what? All right.
It's delightful. I was staying up the road.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. For the Daily Ticker today, we will get to your Oregon State Beavers. Mm. It was a tough weekend. We did have one. I'm going to go ahead and let me find this.
Four straight losses.
By the way, for those who want to continue to question, go look, find me a head-to-head match. Like, people are trying to text in rankings of, like, well, Texas is ranked ahead of Georgia. But, like, no, they weren't. Last week, they weren't. Georgia was a one-loss team. Texas was the one-loss team. They were ahead of them.
Yeah.
Now Georgia's a two-loss team. Keep an eye on this. Georgia or Alabama, who's going to be ranked higher?
Well, Georgia.
Well, Georgia just lost to Ole Miss, and Bama slaughtered LSU.
Bama also has a loss to Vanderbilt, who is no longer a top 25 team, and the shine's come off that. Who's going to be ranked higher? Just file that away. Two lost teams.
Okay, so your prediction would be
Bama will be ranked ahead of Georgia.
Okay, so this weekend would be. Ah, damn it! Should have not closed.
We don't need to get sidetracked again.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I'm curious.
People want to laugh at this. Like, this is what the committee has done. This was the whole debate last year in the playoff. Was they wanted to put Alabama in because Alabama won the SEC, but they couldn't put Alabama in without putting Texas in because Texas beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa early in the season. And Texas had a bad. Who did Texas lose to along the way? I can't remember, but they had a bad loss along the way.
Georgia
in the regular season.
Oh, in the regular
last year they had the random loss. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head.
Was it Kansas or Iowa State or something?
Might have been. Yeah, somebody got them. Somebody tripped them up eventually because they weren't an undefeated team.
Okay, so Bama goes into last week ranked 11th.
Yes,
LSU was 15th.
Yes, so they
slaughtered them.
Destroyed
them.
And Bama has a bad loss. Say what you want about Vanderbilt, a more respectful team. That's a bad loss. It's not a top 25 loss.
And Georgia lost to the 16th ranked team, but they were slotted at 3.
Yes.
So your thing is that Georgia's going to fall.
I bet they'll be 6, 7, or 7. They'll be somewhere in that range. They're going to have to rank Alabama ahead of Georgia. Now, hold me to this.
What are they going to do with BYU Indiana, too? Because they both won.
I mean, BYU should be bumped down because they shouldn't have won. And Indiana,
they struggle with Michigan.
They also very. If Michigan had a head coach with a brain, they could have lost that game, but he doesn't understand clock management and going for it on fourth down. Just file that away. We don't need to spend any more time on that, though.
Coach is not showing himself.
Not showing at all.
Yeah.
So I put out a show tease last night. Duck fans complained because I used the word struggle, so that was lovely. And then one of our Beaver P1s said, we need more Beaver talk this time around. We need a venting and an outlet, somewhere to yell after that woeful performance.
Oof.
Saying Oregon beating Maryland, on the other hand, par for the course, is not news. Yeah. Well, we already did that, so we're moving on. What's the instant reaction to a fourth consecutive loss, likely waving goodbye to a bowl game, a 4-5 record, and a 24-13 loss in which you were outscored 14-3 in the second half and 14-0 in the fourth quarter?
Kind of a rudderless ship is my takeaway. I was in no way. I watched this at a bar where I was at Cannon Beach with some other Beaver fans, and there wasn't a whole lot of like shock and couldn't believe what was happening. This team was prone to lose to a San Jose State-esque team. You can pass on this Oregon State team, even with their guys back. And I wasn't really sitting there stunned. What's stunning to me is just how inept they look, and they're coming off of a bye. What's stunning to me is listening to the coach in the post-game press conference go 2 minutes. Two.
Yeah, we were going to pull some audio, but there's legitimately didn't have an answer longer than 4 seconds.
Because I don't think he has an answer. This isn't just injuries. This is fundamentally broken right now. And whether you think this gets fixed after beating Air Force this weekend, which I'm not holding my breath on that, I don't see potentially more than a win if you're lucky. I don't know if they can answer how to fix what's happening here. They don't have a quarterback. Their run game suddenly isn't really that impressive. Their defense is just getting gashed, even though the numbers aren't amazing by San Jose State. They couldn't get a stop when they needed to. Their decision-making was what? Their fourth down decision on their own 40? Like, at that point, you spotted them 7 with the pick 6 in your own end zone, which was... holy crap, such a bad decision by Gulbranson.
Left 3 points on the field, not kicking the field goal on the drive before that.
I think it's very fair to be asking kind of all the questions that Beaver fans are asking. What's your future here? And I know that sounds so reactionary 9 games into a first-year coaching staff, but it's all fair to me. I think it's all very fair. There were Beaver fans legitimately, Dirt, that thought they were going to be 11-1, 12-0, or 10-2.
Do what Washington State's doing this year.
And be Washington State. And I picked them to go 8-4, and man, does that look generous right now.
Yeah.
They look like a 4-8 team is how they look. And so I just think kind of everything is fair. In your biggest transition year, maybe in your program's history... and that goes back to your poll question that everybody didn't read the right way.
Yeah, is this the low point of Oregon State?
You lost your coach who brought your program back. You lost all this talent. And instead of maybe saying, let's take a deep breath, let's not let players make our decisions, let's open this up a little bit, including with our defensive coordinator. Let's open this up. And who is the best to lead us in the pathway to getting back into relevance? And they did the player hire. They did what players that stayed wanted to do. Yeah. And it's also underrated. It was kind of a cheaper hire for them to just stay internal for a first-year guy. I don't know what the offense answer is. Like, you can...
there's not one this year.
Did they score 2 touchdowns in 2 games? And one of those touchdowns came in the final, like, what, minute?
Yeah.
Against Cal? It's a garbage-ass touchdown.
44-0, and you scored in the final
minute.
Yeah.
Like, I think everything is fair to be talked about right now with where this program is, because if you're doing this year, I would please love to hear the explanation of why this is going to suddenly change and you're jumping other teams that are going to be in your new conference.
Yeah, they made a change at quarterback. Gulbranson was in, and while at times the passing game looked better, it still was only good enough for 13 points and no completions on big downs when you desperately needed them, and he threw a pick six, which was a big play in that game. Your thoughts are welcome, Beaver fans. 503-864-6326. That is the Vancouver Ford text line. I got a couple of comments on something you mentioned there that I really didn't like what they did this weekend. It's okay to be critical or understand the struggles that they're going through. I thought there were some decisions this weekend that had me scratching my head. So I'm going to talk about that coming up next. We'll get into the weekend of college football at the top of the hour, including a couple of big upsets that went down around the country. Back after this on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... we get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. Down goes Miami, down goes Georgia.
Oof.
comment from an AD that I don't know if I've ever heard or seen an AD do.
I think an AD is complaining about
this. Done this to this? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Not this AD, though. This Not is this out AD. Of character yeah. for this AD.
Well, what a game Saturday night. For those who stayed up late enough on Saturday night, boy, oh boy, what a ball game we had.
It's been a rough year, and so sometimes you get out of character reactions from people when they're not
lashing out.
Yeah, and then you add the holy war part of it, and it just... all hell, quite literally, was breaking loose for some
of those
people.
In the Holy War. It was, man. Not fun for Utah fans on Saturday night. We'll get to all that in the final hour of the show. And the Portland Trail Blazers, round of applause for your performance yesterday. Way to bring the effort. Way to bring the effort.
Great job.
I want to get to something. So
but they play hard for Chauncey.
They play hard for Chauncey, that's for sure. They don't ever lose by 60 or 50 or 40. It does not happen under Chauncey. We'll get to that in the final hour of the show.
We have somebody quiet quitting on that team.
We do. A lot of Texan Beaver fans coming in. I want to try and get to some of them. I want to get your thoughts on it. So you kind of touched on it there in the last segment. I am somebody who usually advocates and will support for aggressive coaches. That's the way I run my program in NCAA 25. I like going, I like being aggressive, try and win the game, have some balls, don't punt on fourth and one. Like that's my general philosophy. Mm-hmm. Have some confidence in your offense that they could get the job done. Be aggressive.
Be aggressive.
However,
there it is.
That also comes with a caveat, and this is where sometimes I feel like analytics misses the mark. Now, I don't know how Oregon State calculates his things and what numbers Trent Bray uses in his decision-making to go for it on fourth down. The numbers might have told them on fourth and five from the five-yard line, analytics says go for it. Mm. Does analytics take into account the fact that your quarterback is slower than molasses on a cold day in Georgia and your passing game sucks? Does analytics tell you when you're going for it on fourth and four from your own 46-yard line that your offense has been horrible in the second half of that game?
Yeah.
And your quarterback had previously thrown a pick six? Like, I watching that game, usually I think you got to make the decision of, in the moment when they call it, do you like it or do you not? Whether the outcome of the play, don't let it determine how you feel. As they're lining up to either kick a field goal or go for it, what does your gut tell you? And in both instances in the Oregon State game, my gut said, what are we doing here? When you have a slow quarterback and you go for it on fourth and five from the five, one, running the football is basically eliminated. You can't call a run play there because you're either a genius with massive balls or you're getting booed out of your own stadium. So running the football is eliminated if I'm a defensive coordinator. You don't have a mobile quarterback, so he's not going to be able to extend or, you know, scramble around, make something happen with his legs. You can't get him out on the run on a bootleg where there also is a threat of running because, again, he can't move. So you're essentially stuck calling a generic pass play on fourth and five with very little room to work because there's a lid on the defense with the back of the end zone. I didn't like you had that game again. It was similar to me to Nevada. What were they up in the Nevada game? Up by 10?
10.
Up by 10. Your defense, yes, the injuries were terrible. Then you throw a pick six and everything kind of snowballs. You started that second half. It was 10-10 tie. You overcame a horrific defensive PI call late in the first half. You blocked the field goal. Mike Parker's banging on the glass. You're like, all right, here we go. You get a three and out to open the second half. You go down and kick a field goal. Mm-hmm. You then get an interception. You drive all the way back down. Like, you were in control of that game. And not going for it on that fourth down, or excuse me, going for it on that fourth down and not taking points there, I felt like tipped a little bit of the momentum, gave San Jose State hope. Next drive, they get the pick six.
Sure.
Next thing you know, you go for it again. I hated both of those calls to go for it, considering in a game that I thought your defense actually played pretty well and held San Jose State to 17 points.
Yeah, I think going for it on fourth down is such a fundamental question. Like, I think a lot of people are largely in on the be aggressive, don't be scared of the moment. I also agree with the sometimes to me, it's not about analytics. Analytics actually agree with Todd Bowles against the Chiefs. How did everybody else feel?
Yeah.
Go win it.
Yeah.
And they kick the field goal. They go to overtime. They lose. Right. So I just largely think you have to evaluate the moment. Now, these were the possessions by San Jose State prior to that. Punt, interception, missed field goal, field goal.
Yeah.
Those are the four possessions.
Wasn't like they were ripping up and down the field scoring touchdowns. And now one of those punts, by the way, should be noted, they also had horrific offensive PI calls against them. I don't know what we were looking at on either of those.
That's fine.
I digress.
But that was it. What were your previous possessions? Field goal, turnover on downs because you didn't want to take another field goal, which would have put you up 16-10.
Yeah.
And I'm not always one that believes, but sometimes the butterfly effect. You go up 16-10. You've held them relatively down from where we thought they would be offensively.
Yeah.
Hey, you're up six now. How about that? You didn't. You went for it. You didn't get it. They then punted and then you threw a pick six in your own end zone. I just, you have to be honest with yourself sometimes and say, we're down 17-13. We're at our own 40. We could make this too easy for them. Let's play field position here. There was 11 minutes in the fourth quarter.
In a 17-13 game on your own 46-yard line, you handed them a short field.
You had caused them to punt multiple times, turn them over on downs. You had a spot there where it wouldn't have been the end of the game to punt it.
No.
And I'm with you. I largely lean being aggressive. But in the moment watching this, I went, ugh.
Dude, Bengal Branson's your quarterback. Like,
well, I mean, it doesn't matter.
It's one thing if Cam Ward's your quarterback and you can scramble around and, like, all right, I roll the dice there.
It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. You can name any quarterback they have, and I'd say that. I just, you kind of have to play to who you are. And who you're not is an offensively talented team. You are a struggle bus, a bit of a mess offensively. You have two touchdowns in two games. You're beating your opponent largely at that point. You kind of have to play into your identity. I think it's easier for a Dan Lanning to say, I'm going to run Jordan Burch 40 yards on this fake because I'm the number one team in the country. We're not playing great and we're still controlling this game. I can afford to risk this. It's not the same if you're Oregon State. And again, I just think back, I thought his post-game press conference kind of sums up how it feels.
Yeah, there's an anger there, but also not a lot of answers.
I don't think he has answers. No. And I talked to somebody who's at this game. It wasn't a great atmosphere. There are a lot more seats becoming scattered and scattered. And if they lose to Air Force, I don't care if Washington State comes to town. I don't know what that's going to be. So you're not only losing momentum with your team and your season, you're doing the worst thing that could have happened. Your fan base is becoming apathetic, and it's just like, what's the point? We're not in a real conference anymore.
Yeah.
We can't compete. We've lost all of our funding and conference dollars and cents. Like, there's a real apathy setting in, and it's the worst possible thing that could happen to them.
Talk about leaning in your identity. I'm glad you brought that up, because there was a team this weekend that I thought did that, where we know what, when we envision a Kalen DeBoer offense, we know what sticks out in our mind. It's Penix and Grubb calling plays, slinging it all over the field, these great weapons. It's felt like at times Alabama has tried to make their offense that when Jalen Milroe is not that kind of quarterback. He's not a horrible passer, but that's just not his strength.
He's not a Penix.
You know what their rush to pass breakdown was this weekend, play calling?
It was insane. He threw like 105 yards.
48 runs to 18 passes.
Yeah.
He's an elite athlete. Let's run the damn football.
He's a big body dude.
He had 12 carries for 185 yards. Yep. It's just like, let's stop trying to be something we're not. We're going to be a rushing football team. Part of that is the opponent, and LSU's run defense isn't very good, but it's just finding out who you are and discovering that identity that it feels like Oregon State has really struggled with. One listener at the Vancouver Four text line said, why are we playing Dr. Golbranson over Jabari Johnson? Let's see a full game of Johnson. We already know what Golbranson can do. It's absolutely nothing, especially when the run game is asked. I mean, that was the frustrating part, was at least there were times where you made plays down the field. Trent Walker had 11 catches for 151 yards.
He's like, their clear number one
It was the best your pass game had looked all season. It just, when you needed it in the biggest moments on third downs or fourth downs, you couldn't find a way, and then you threw a bad pick six, which, to be fair to Golbranson, wasn't even like that was a miscommunication. He thought the receiver was running an out. The receiver kind of sat down in zone coverage, and he threw it right to a safety with a miscommunication on that route. He was asked, Trent Bray was, after the game, is it time to start giving some younger guys looks? Like, a bowl game's probably not going to happen. Like, what are you trying to accomplish the rest of the way? He completely shot that down. But that would be my thought if I were a Beaver fan. Not that all of this is on Golbranson.
Sure.
But just, I mean, you got a highly touted freshman there. I know he's going to be limited throwing the football. It's not like you're lighting up the world offensively anyways. Get him some reps. Let him run around and make some plays and see if you can find something.
I think the interesting thing here is, I believe, and I'm trying to find the quote, Jaden Robinson, they're like seventh-year DB. He said the quiet part out loud. Rebuild. And that was not the messaging we got from Bray and everybody else around that program going into the year. It was, we're going to hum just fine with this schedule, and we'll be okay. Boy, you lose to Air Force, 4-8, year one, woof.
That the Air Force, I mean, it's already bad, but you would be staring at a,
But you're not going to be, here's the thing.
I'm not shocked, no.
No, I think if they lost to Air Force, you wouldn't come in Monday and be like, whoa, I can't believe that happened. It's kind of who they've been.
A couple of more thoughts here. It's not going to change for this year coming at the Vancouver for a text line, but my hope as a Beaver fan is you just try and rebuild, be ready for 2026, be the fifth best conference, be in position to win in 2026. I'm fully on board with punting on every game this season. If it means playing the young guys, the staff, and the young guys taking their lumps, building for 2026. 25 is just going to be another stopgap, and I think the narrative going into it needs to be that instead of, well, this is a winnable schedule. I'm still hopeful for my future, of the future with Bray. It felt like he's dealt a really bad hand, and that's where, like, both
John
sides of
this. 8-4, and we're questioning everything. This dude might go 4-8, and it's all roses. Wait till 2026. I don't think that's...
of that can be fair. Where he was, I mean, he's had to lose his entire roster essentially. You had to put that together in the portal in the short term. You can't do that. They lost half their staff. Like, so on the one hand, it is, you want to be fair to him of, like, I don't know how many coaches you would have hired that would have won in this situation. But on the other hand, is there an area that you could look at the team and say, as the year has gone on, they've gotten better?
No.
Like that, like
the defense has gotten worse.
Let's use UCLA as an example here. UCLA, did anybody watch them beat Iowa on Friday night?
They might go bowling this year.
They might. They beat Nebraska in Nebraska. Like, that's a, that was a horrible football team early in the season.
Bad public speaker. Maybe not that bad of a coach.
He's kind of like, they've gotten better, and there's like, okay, you're making progress and you're catching some people napping, and look at
that. Nebraska at Nebraska. That was big.
Those are nice wins. And so they're playing better, and we all made fun of him early in the season. That's, and injuries have been a big part of this, but
this has been my Chauncey Billups point.
Yes. Where are you getting better?
What has gotten better, and what is evident? Because it's not, I don't know what you'd point to for Bray.
Yeah.
In year one, to be fair, yes.
Yeah. One last one, a Beaver alum here. This was always going to be a wasted season. The goal for this year was to keep the team together, keep recruiting momentum building. They have failed in both those things. This year is over. Find out what talent we have and get ready to recruit. That's my general thought as well.
They can't recruit.
But they can't recruit.
They recruit
right now
like a middle-level Mountain West team. So I don't, like, maybe the expectation is that that's going to be good enough. They'll develop that talent.
Hit the portal hard, maybe.
I'm certainly leaning more into the pessimistic situation of all this. I have largely since the conference died.
Yeah.
But I appreciate people staying with optimism. I really do. I know it doesn't come across that way. I don't mean to, like, be thumbing... What is that expression?
Thumbing your nose.
Thumbing my nose.
Yes,
in
looking
your face.
Down on you.
Yeah, like, I hope to be wrong on all of this stuff. It just, where it's trended for over a year and now with how they're playing and looking, it's hard for me to have that same optimism.
We got a lot to get to in the final hour. Miami lost this weekend, so we can all make fun of Mario Cristobal together. Georgia went down. What does that mean for them? How do we? What do we make of the races in college football? It's wild. Looking around the conferences, playoff, and all that. A chaos year is upon us. We get to a couple of leftovers in the NFL that we didn't get to earlier. And another banner night for Chauncey Billups. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.